Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. More than 5 million children in the United States have tested positive for COVID-19 since the pandemic started. With the highly contagious Delta variant, infections are rising. The American Academy of Pediatrics reports that more than 240,000 cases were diagnosed in the first week of September, the second highest number of child cases in any week since the pandemic began. Dr. Bradley Schlager is the president and CEO of Kennedy Krieger Institute and holds the Zanville Krieger Faculty Endowed Chair at Kennedy Krieger. He's also a professor of neurology and pediatrics at Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Schlager, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's been apparent since the pandemic started that older adults were particularly vulnerable to COVID. Why are children less likely to get severely ill?
Well, it seems that children are less likely to get severely ill, although I do worry that that is a perception that's driven by the very early experience that we had with the pandemic. There may be biological factors. For example, the mechanism by which the virus can get into the body, the nasal mucosal surface, the way respiratory viruses often get in, there may be a different mechanism or less susceptibility to that pathway in younger children, for example. It's also the case that when once ill, children tend to have less medical comorbidities. So they may be less likely to have serious consequences because of that. But it's also the case that early in the pandemic, we were dealing with a number of mitigating strategies that really affected kids' lives. They weren't in school, on site in school. They were not participating in team sports, group sports. There are all kinds of confounders that may have led to this idea that they're dramatically less vulnerable. In the recent months, we are seeing in the context of the Delta variant that they can get infected. Not only can they get infected, they can get seriously ill, hospitalized, some die, and those that don't succumb have long-term consequences.
Yeah, I want to pursue a lot of that with you. I mean, the American Academy of Pediatrics says childhood COVID cases are increasing exponentially after having been on the decline early in the summer. Is that all because of the Delta variant?
It's largely attributable to the Delta variant. And it may be because one of the things that we know about this variant is that individuals who are infected or even asymptomatic carry a larger viral load. So when they are shedding virus, there's a larger opportunity to be exposed to it. Children may be getting a larger viral load from Delta and increasing the likelihood of infection as a consequence.
And serious pediatric cases, cases that require hospitalization or result in death, how does that look now compared to last year?
Well, if we look a year ago, right now, September of 20, the case rate for pediatric illness was significantly lower than it is now. Of all the positive cases, it was more in the 2 to 5% overall. That number crept up significantly in the winter months to around 15% of total cases, but the base rate of infection was clearly lower in kids a year ago. Now we're talking of that 240,000 weekly case rate that you just mentioned. That's about 30% of the overall cases that each week. So the proportion is much higher. If you look at hospitalizations a year ago, the first 6 months of the pandemic, there were, let's say, roughly 5,000 hospitalizations nationally. In the 12 months since that point, it's been about 16,000 hospitalizations, accelerating in these recent months. And the death rate has a comparable pattern to the hospitalization rate. So clearly higher overall and accelerating these last few months.
This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with pediatric neurologist Dr. Bradley Schlager, president of Kennedy Krieger Institute, about COVID infections in children. So students in Maryland, public school students, all had the option to start the new school year in person. Just last week, legislators voted to require mask wearing in all public schools. What do you view as the most important measures to stop the spread of COVID in schools?
Well, I should say that I have school-age children myself, so this issue hits close to home, of course. I think the mitigating steps have to be viewed as a layered approach. We all want our children to be in school on site. We know that's the best pathway for optimal education. So to do that successfully and safely, we need multiple approaches that includes masking, it includes social distancing whenever it's possible and feasible, and it includes vaccination for 12 and up. And we're looking forward to the opportunity for kids younger than 12 to be vaccinated, hopefully soon. No single measure by itself can be the only approach. It has to be a multitude of approaches. This is classic public health way of thinking about solving a complicated problem such as this one. And I think policy and practice ought to follow those public health principles.
Let me pick up on your point about vaccination. President Biden calls what we're in now a pandemic of the unvaccinated, and right now that includes children under age 12. Why is it taking longer for vaccines for children to become available?
Yeah, that's a vexing issue, isn't it? I think there's a multitude of reasons for that. I'm not an FDA expert, but based on what I know and understand, my thought is that it's a combination of the need to know what the right dose is. We can't simply assume that the adult dose for vaccination is going to translate down to children, especially younger children. So dosing and safety of dosing matters. The interval between doses also matters. We can't make the same assumption, again, what we've learned from the adult trials. And so for a vaccine that has sequential dosing, we need to know what the interval is. But it's also the case that you need a case rate. You need to have enough cases where you can discern the difference between the active treatment, the vaccination group or groups, and the placebo. And if there's a low level of overall infection, it's going to be hard to get the signal that you need. Well, paradoxically, as we are having these accelerated cases, it may be that we're getting more signal now. And that's the that kind of information is what's necessary for decision makers at the FDA to push the under 12 across the finish line.
And the current approval for the vaccine, the COVID vaccine for children, is an emergency use authorization. What would you say to parents who are on the fence about vaccinating their kids?
Well, from a public health standpoint, as well as somebody who my whole career is in the pediatric neurology space, taking care of children with neurodevelopmental disabilities, this is not a new discussion. We have, my entire career, the guidance has been for children with neurodevelopmental issues to get vaccinated. And the guidance is overall, in the setting of a pandemic, to have your child vaccinated. There is vanishingly rare situations where there is a medical contraindication to getting the vaccine. So we strongly encourage, even, I understand that it's in the context of this emergency use authorization setting, we strongly encourage all parents and guardians to get their children vaccinated as soon as they are eligible to do so.
We need to take a short break in our conversation about pediatric COVID cases with Dr. Bradley Schlager, President and CEO of Kennedy Krieger Institute, here on The Record and WIPR. When we're back, we'll get into how Kennedy Krieger is treating long COVID symptoms in children. If you find WIPR's thorough coverage of the pandemic helpful, you can show your support by making a pledge. Here's Nathan to tell us how.
Come to WIPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. COVID-19 cases among children are soaring, raising concerns about the risk of severe illness and persistent symptoms. In response to the pandemic, Kennedy Krieger created the Pediatric Post-COVID-19 Rehabilitation Clinic to help children and adolescents regain neurological and physical functioning. My guest is pediatric neurologist Dr. Bradley Schlager, president and CEO of Kennedy Krieger Institute. Dr. Schlager, in December, we spoke with Dr. Melissa Trovato, who directs pediatric rehabilitation at Kennedy Krieger, about the clinic. And at the time, the clinic had seen three patients. What's the caseload now?
We're up to around 40 patients with an ever-increasing request to be seen, coming not just locally, but regionally, as word gets out of the availability of this specialized clinic.
And what symptoms are you seeing in patients? What does long COVID look like in children?
It's a multitude of symptoms that resembles what's being described on the adult side. And that includes fatigue, lingering fatigue, dizziness, decreased endurance, poor conditioning or deconditioning, intolerance to changes in position that might drop your blood pressure, cause you to be lightheaded or lose consciousness. This is in addition to the other medical consequences, so other organ systems that can be affected, lungs, kidneys, et cetera. But we're focusing more on the rehabilitation of kids with these long COVID symptoms. And I should point out that COVID is known to affect the nervous system broadly. And if you think about the nervous system, it has really three major components: the central nervous system, like brain and spinal cord; the peripheral nervous system, nerves, the junction between nerve and muscle; and then the autonomic nervous system, which has involuntary function, like controlling heart rate and blood pressure. All of those components of the nervous system can be directly or indirectly affected by the acute infection, as well as the lingering consequences in post-COVID. So, for example, the central nervous system, you might have long-term effects of attention and cognition. People describe brain fog. For the peripheral nervous system, you might have numbness and tingling, loss of sensation. And for the autonomic nervous system, you might have racing heart or this orthostatic hypotension I described, where you get dizzy or lose consciousness with standing up or changing position, for example. All of the pieces of the nervous system broadly can be affected by COVID, either acutely or in the chronic phase. So the clinic is made up of specialists who focus on pediatric neurology, pediatric physiatry or physical medicine and rehabilitation focused physician, but also physical therapists and psychologists. And because we are who we are, we also have access to lots of expertise in different domains that can be pulled in to help support patients in that clinic.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Dr. Bradley Schlager, president of Kennedy Krieger Institute, about the potential consequences of pediatric COVID infections. You've conducted a lot of research on how children's brains function. What risk does COVID pose to children with neurodevelopmental disabilities?
Well, neurodevelopmental disabilities pose a particularly worrisome situation for an illness like COVID, and really viral illnesses in general. So we've known for decades that, for example, children with cerebral palsy or other neurodevelopmental issues are more likely to be sick, hospitalized, and die from influenza than age-matched peers. We're seeing the same thing play out with kids with neurodevelopmental issues, not just kids, across the lifespan. Individuals with neurodevelopmental and other disabilities are more likely to be hospitalized and to die from COVID. Why that's the case is a multitude of reasons. One very clear one is that we have a brain that has already endured some kind of hit, whether it's from a genetic or an acquired condition, that makes it by itself more vulnerable or less able to withstand the consequences of an infection that either directly or indirectly affects the nervous system. But it's likely that there are many different reasons why individuals with neurodevelopmental disorders are more likely to be adversely affected.
Of the estimated 10 to 30 million people who will face long COVID symptoms, a portion of them are likely to live with permanent disabilities. If that's also true for children, what does that mean for how we move forward from the pandemic?
we need to be prepared for an increase in chronic illness across the lifespan, and from where I sit, particularly for children. I worry in the immediate about the consequences of long COVID interfering with education. It's already the case. Education's been disrupted because of all that has had to happen to keep people safe in the immediate. But with these long-term consequences, I worry about the inability for students to be able to fully engage in education across their trajectory. So long-term chronic medical issues in tandem with a hit to the educational opportunities, I think there's a risk for a generational impact that is not something that we've seen previously.
Dr. Schlager, I appreciate you taking time to talk to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Bradley Schlager is a pediatric neurologist and president and CEO of Kennedy Krieger Institute. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thank you for listening. We love learning more about important developments like the pandemic, and we love sharing that exploration with you. If you think it's a valuable journey, please become a member of WYPR. Here's Nathan.
Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.